call House State Affairs Committee to order. It is April 6, 1989. The time is 8:52. Let the record show that present Representative McLean, Sponholz, and Hanley, and the chair, Representative Boucher. We carry two items over from the previous meeting, H.J.R. 34, which has to deal with an amendment to the Alaska State Constitution, and then another amendment, H.J.R. 35, which would also deal with an amendment to the Constitution. As I stated earlier, both of these recommendations were amongst two of the strongest recommendations made by the Alaska Statehood Commission in their final report to the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House on January 24th, 1983. Unfortunately, as we've stated before, sometimes politics has a short institutional memory. A new administration comes in, and oftentimes the brightest works are set aside as the new broom sweeps clean. But I think it's probably particularly relevant, as I've stated before, and I'm simply repeating this so that the two former members of the commission who will be testifying today are kind of brought up to speed on what the thinking was when I brought this legislation back before us. It's probably particularly timely right now as Alaska looks beyond the revenues that we have been receiving from the oil. We begin to look to foreign trade. We're a handful of years away from what some call the century of the Pacific. We are a little more than a year away from the first fiber optic cable, which will span the Pacific, and we are hoping and indeed fighting to make sure that the state of Alaska is one of the off ramps on that fiber optic cable as it moves south out of here to the western United States and then across to the eastern seaboard. So we feel that this may be a time to renew our commitment to our state constitution and add strength to it, strength that the founding fathers had thought of putting in, but at the time felt that maybe too strong a statement at that time might have negative reaction in the halls of Congress. So we have both Sue Green and Ed Murdies out there. I appreciate the both of you taking time from your busy schedule, but the both of you spent many, many hours in helping to make a more perfect union, a plan for reaction, a plan for action, a reality. And with that, Sue's the farthest away, Ed, and unless you've got a court to run into right away, which I'm sure you do, you're always busy, may we hear from Sue? Ed, you want to come in? Are you there? I hope I didn't speak to air.
Can you hear me?
Did you both hear what I had to say?
I heard what you had to say.
Oh, gosh, I was hoping. I says, holy smoke, I might have just, I don't want to do that again. Ed, is it all right if Sue comes in first?
Fine.
Okay, great. You can hear us now?
Where are you, Sue?
I am from Arlington, Virginia today.
Oh, my goodness.
Where is she?
Arlington, Virginia.
Yes.
You cannot hear us?
Yes, we are. Sue, are you back there permanently now?
No, I'm July of this next year.
Okay, then we haven't lost you up here.
No, it's never a permanent loss.
Okay, Sue, why don't you go ahead? I don't know if you've had a chance to have a copy of the legislation. If both you and Ed have gotten a copy of the legislation?
Yes, I have a copy of the legislation and some of the testimony given so far.
All right, excellent. Well, my staff usually does great work. So why don't Sue go ahead, sign in, name, address, so forth for the record.
My name is Sue Green. My address presently for this year is 8229 Roxbury Drive, Alexandria, Virginia, 22309. My purpose is to testify in favor of HDR 34 and HDR 35, the proposed amendments to the Alaska Constitution, relating to the sovereignty of the state and to the right of the state to cooperate with foreign nations. I was appointed to the Alaska Statehood Commission when it was formed in October of 1980, and I served until the completion of our assignment in 1983. The final report, entitled A More Perfect Union, represented the end product of 2 years of legal and political research, public testimony, and open debate by the Commission. A reflection of the underlying theme of the results is found in our number one recommendation, that Alaska become a more vocal and active state, assuming leadership in defining the range and boundaries of state powers within the federal union. The HDR 34 and 35 are an outgrowth of that thematic recommendation, and they both represent methods by which the state can act affirmatively in expressing its rights and powers consistent with the federal constitution. I am not one who easily or frivolously advocates changes to constitutions at any level of governance, but I believe these proposed changes are even more meaningful now than they were when the Commission proposed them in 1983 in the final presentation of the Commission's report to the legislature. Even though the changes will honestly not produce any immediately discernible or dramatic changes in a status quo, they do become important as more affirmative statements of rightful and appropriate powers and relationships of the state of Alaska inherent in and based on the U.S. Constitution, as well as the existing state constitution. The economical and political events discussed by both Brian Rogers and Bob Clark in their testimony earlier underline very well the current desirability of Alaska's clarifying and restating its relationship to the federal government and the authority remaining with the state under the U.S. Constitution. While HJR 34, the clarification of the philosophical basis of the relationship, HJR 35 is a timely and valuable reiteration of authority. Since statehood, Alaska has become increasingly more involved in international economic, environmental, cultural, and education programs and agreements. Futurists and economists continue to say, and even more emphatically now that we're nearing the 90s, that the future focus will be on the Pacific Rim. They see, often more clearly than Alaskans myself, that Alaska plays a significant role in that future. To grow into that role of influence and participation, the state must become more vocal and build alliances to influence a world that still needs educating about its far north neighbors, and become more assertive about Alaska's relationship to the rest of the state and to other political entities. There are still well-intended and relatively intelligent citizens of the state and the nation who view Alaska as something akin to a U.S. colony. And rather than a colony or even a territory, Alaska is a free and independent state subject only to the federal constitution. It participates as a partner with other states and with the federal governmental entity created to serve the member states. I am not one to dwell on perceived or real wrongs of the past, or the present for that matter, when looking at the Alaska statehood benefits and detriments. However, I am convinced that if Alaska is to exert its maximum influence and responsibly create its rightful economic, political, HJR-34 and HJR-35 would certainly be two meaningful steps in that direction. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today and appreciate your hooking up with me this far away.
Thank you very much, Sue. Are there any questions or comments? Sue, thank you very much. As usual, you're eloquent. I felt very deeply when I came back here and I saw this, probably one of the finest documents put out, that it was laying there gathering dust, and that I wondered in our comfort of the present that we may be forgetting the real destiny of our state, not just as one of the 50 states, but the role that we can play. And your eloquent testimonies are very much appreciated. Thanks for taking the time, and keep in touch. I think that we might just get this legislation through, hopefully, anyhow. Ed? One of my very favorite people, former Senator Ed Mertes. Why don't you sign in?
Hello?
You're 5x5, Ed. Go ahead.
Red, first of all, I want to say hello to Sue Green, in case she's still on, because I haven't talked to Sue since we broke up the State Commission in 83, but she's very, very eloquent and, of course, very convincing, and I want to tell her hi, Sue. Also, I want to thank you, Red, and the members of the committee for affording an opportunity. I'm a former member of the State of the Commission to testify. You were right, we spent about 3 years on this. But, Red, also I want to commend you for your vision as vice chairman of the committee, State of the Commission, I mean. You really pushed the two concepts that are before the committee today through the entire 3 years of the commission. And I admire you for doing this, and I was waiting for somebody, frankly, to do this a couple years earlier, but we here's the opportunity. I just want to back up a little bit, Red, and before I testify about the merits of these two resolutions, and simply say this: in 1955 and 56, I was in the Attorney General's office, Territorial Attorney General's office, and was an advisor to the Constitutional Convention. And my partner, as a matter of fact, was chairman of the one, Bob McNeely, and he was on the Judiciary Committee, and I am intimately familiar with the committee proposal number 12 at the Constitutional Convention. As a matter of fact, that one I helped draft it, but I was familiar with it. It was introduced on December 16, 1955. This is in reference to House Joint Resolution 35. The phrase is exactly what you propose in HGR 35, except it says to the extent consistent with the laws of the United States, and you would simply add the Constitution of the United States. The reason I mention this is because I want to give you a little background as to the purpose of this language, and it is excellent, and it wasn't adopted at that time, as you properly stated, Red, because fear that Congress would raise a red flag in Congress. Just briefly, the purpose of the State of the Commission, you know, it was to contribute to the strength of the Union and the unity of the United States by eliminating the injustices the federal government cast on Alaska. It was not a commission to succeed from the Union. That's a very positive reason the State of the Commission was formed. But, you know, I'd like to talk briefly about these injustices, not to regurgitate the past, but to cast the background to my testimony. I was up here 51, 52, and clean through the statehood movement. And, of course, one of the main injustices it brought on statehood itself was the fact that fish traps, and we had no authority over our resources or our local government or anything else. And hence that brought on statehood. But the injustices that really brought on the statehood commission, which I want to remind the committee members, was formed after a vote of the people. There was strong legislative opposition to this commission, but the people of Alaska spoke. And here's some of the injustices that brought on this commission. Number one, the blackmail clause in Section 10 of ANSCA. It said if the state of Alaska sued the federal government under ANSCA to protect its land rights, there would be no land transfers. And to my knowledge, that's the only time a state was threatened by the federal government that if it exercised a legitimate right in the courts, it would lose its land, in effect. Then we have the Jones Act that was in effect, which raised the cost of living of freight 25 to 33% higher freight rates, just because we have to comply with the Jones Act. Then, of course, there was the export ban on North Slope oil, which the committee studied and found out that it resulted in almost $1 billion loss of revenue to the United States government and the state of Alaska combined because we couldn't ship our oil to Japan. Now, remember, to my knowledge, Alaska is the only state in the Union that a foreign country. That's blatant discrimination. And, of course, all these things brought on the reason for the Status Commission. Now, Rick, you and I know there's something today that I'd like to bring up that nobody's mentioned so far, which is a critical reason why House Joint Resolution 35 should be passed. Now, 34, I think it's a motherhood issue. I think it's a wonderful thing, and we should be. It's a philosophical state, but I'm going to focus in on 35. The Canadian Free Tariff Treaty, you know, that is a revolutionary thing that's going to affect Alaska more than anything else. And we should have the power to deal directly with Canada on that as long as it's consistent with the Constitution of the United States. We are the only state in the Union, aside from Hawaii, that's not contiguous to the United States. It's our best interest to deal with Canada. Now, if we can deal with Canada on a direct basis, for instance, we can eliminate the Jones Act because we can ship from Vancouver, tariff-free. There's all kinds of far-reaching implications why Resolution HJ35 is so significant. Now, let's talk about current injustices. For instance, can you imagine the federal government refusing to help the city of New York, the Puget Sound area, if they had an oil spill down there? Would they let Exxon be the sole person in charge of cleaning up in Puget Sound or New York City? That would be inconceivable. They would be out there en masse. But because we're in Alaska, they leave it up to Exxon. That's no criticism of Exxon, because I think Exxon's doing the best they can. What about the injustice? And this is the worst one of all. If anybody's followed the ANWR legislation, they're putting another blackmail clause in that legislation that says they're going to eliminate the 90-10 to 50-50. And they said the state of Alaska sues and tries to enforce its constitutional statehood covenant to 90-10 share the revenue equals, and ANWR will not be open. There is a horrible injustice right there. And Sue's right. The purpose of the Status Committee, among other things, was to form, was to try to convince the federal government it's their best interest to treat us fairly. But we can't do it unless we forge regional coalitions, like, for instance, the Western United States and even Canada. So, Red, I think your vision is just magnificent in HGR 35, bringing it up at this time. All the reasons in the world contribute to the passage of this resolution. Let's talk about Alaska's international stature. Well, even in baseball, Red, you know, you're well-known for baseball. The whole Alaska League's going over to the Far East. We're playing Korea, Japan, and Taiwan, and Hawaii. And Alaska's moving more and more into an international posture at trade. You mentioned, Red, in your opening remark, we've got to look beyond world revenues to foreign trade. Well, this resolution is prophetic in that sense. It absolutely should be passed because it contributes to our... would contribute to diversification. We'd be, for instance, being able to trade with Canada directly instead of going through the State Department would be a wonderful thing. And I just want to close my remarks by saying that I think this should be passed. I think the people of Alaska should be given an opportunity to vote on this. And the United States has got to, this voter 48, has got to quit treating us as a colony. But we shouldn't bellyache about it. We should do something positive. And the way to do something positive is to make it to the best interest of Congress, not to treat us the way they are. Don't threaten to leave the Union. Say we're trying to strengthen the Union by having the federal government treat us fair. We know we failed in the past because we didn't forge any coalitions. We didn't get any support in the states. Let's be salesmen instead of bellyachers. And I think that's the spirit of HGR 35. I don't have anything more to say. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify. I enjoyed serving on the Status Commission, and I want to commend Red Boucher and the whole committee for their foresight in bringing up this resolution. That's all I have to say, and I'm Ed Murray, and I'm testifying from Fairbanks, Alaska, from my law office.
Wow. How about your address, Senator, so that we have that for the record?
Suite 210 Northwood Building, Post Office Box 1039, Fairbanks.
Wow! You know, Murdy, you and I are the type somebody said, hey, you two are never going to die. You're just going to blow up. And thanks a lot, Ed. And one of the things is this...
I'm glad to try to answer him, but let me tell you something. I commend the legislature for what they're doing.
Alice.
Ed, I really appreciate hearing from you. It sounds like you're alive and well and doing great things up there. I really appreciated hearing, you know, your perspective and your testimony and your, you know, urgent request that we really move on this. It's really been a big help to me to understand what transpired in that statehood commission. So this has been new, and I'm excited about it. I think it's great, and I'm really pleased that Red brought this up, too. And really appreciated and enjoyed your testimony.
I also want to say something to you. We're talking in angry between sessions about the generally Alaska's foreign position in international affairs. But you realize that the positive nature of this thing is what I like so much. Now think of that $800 million loss of revenue because the federal government, through the selfish vested interest on the East Coast, imposed that export ban on us. Mexican oil is being shipped right now, crossing Alaskan tankers in the Gulf to Yokohama while we go right by Mexico. That's insane. We should do something about this and send that Mexican oil to the southwestern United States and send Alaskan oil directly to Japan, but they don't do that. And I think that we ought to raise our voice, and this resolution is something that will accomplish that, and the people of Alaska should vote on it, and I really admire this committee for taking it up.
Thanks again, Ed.
Ed, thanks a lot. God bless.
Okay, bye-bye, Red.
That was some dynamic testimony.
Oh, he is. Well, if you've ever, when
I've
he was sent,
I've been at a conference with him.
He's
really a
national JC, international JC, brave, you know, Mr. Expressive.
Yeah.
All right, well, there isn't much that I can add to it. Are there any comments from the commission? What do I need one more to move it out of committee?
Ann will sign it.
Yeah, okay.
I think Sue Green is still online.
Sue, are you still on? Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Representative Boucher, this is Inez, the moderator of the bridge operator in Anchorage. She has dropped offline.
All right. Thank you so very much. Sir, Ed, are you still there?
No, he hung up too.
Okay.
Okay, I'd like to move House Joint Resolution 34 out of committee with individual recommendations.
All right. Any objection? And we also have HJR 35.
Mr. Chairman, I would move HJR 35 to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations.
Any objection? So moved. And as I said, I would hope that that you folks sign on as co-sponsors on this.
Well, that'd be great.
This one, yeah, because I hadn't run around soliciting a lot of co-sponsors. I'm sure that when it comes up that we'll have them, but I would like to have you folks on it. It's the only one, only two that I'll ask, because I think if we, can you get a couple of slips for them over there? In fact, try and get all of them before it moves out. Because right now it's a little paid attention to piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that'd be great. And we can get the slips.
We have Julie Barney in New York.
All right, this is for the facts, the next
this
piece of legislation.
Yes,
tell them we will be with them in just a minute.
The bridge operator is dialing them in now. They are not on the line yet. I just wanted to let you know that she's going to let us know when they're online.
All right, okay, all right. The next item before the committee is HB 232, which has to do an act relating to the use of facsimile devices for commercial solicitation. This legislation was introduced by Representative Hoffman, co-chair of Finance, and we have people online to testify, but Bob, I understand that you were going to testify on behalf of...
Yes, sir.
All right. You come forward. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bob Heron. I work for Representative Hoffman.
HJR 34 and 35.
Representative Hoffman introduced this legislation after a constituent called and asked if they could do anything about unsolicited use of facsimile devices. And at the suggestion and encouragement by the chairman, we contacted John Soma, the professor of law at the University of Denver, and we called him, and he said that this is such a brand new item, a brand new issue, that he had never heard of this before. And currently there are no laws in any state that have to do with this issue. And there are, five states that are considering it: Washington, Oregon, Connecticut, New York, and Alaska. So the representative is not coming in with any assumptions that we're going to try and move mountains here, but that we're just want to get the ball rolling and start dealing with the issue. If there's any questions, I'll take them at this time.
Are there any questions?
No, Madam Chairman. I think we've reviewed this and it's on. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman. No, I don't have any questions. We have reviewed this in the office and appreciate kind of the foresight of Representative Hoffman in introducing this legislation.
Bob, I did have a question. This is just for solicitation. It doesn't mean for ordering of goods or purchase of goods through Telefax.
Generally, what we're trying to do is that, as you know, through the mail you receive all sorts of offers to buy things like pens, etc. And currently, this is so new, as best as we can figure, there's about 2 million fax machines in use now. And of course, every day, literally hundreds are bought every day, and it's growing. So it's so new that there's only one of these companies in Alaska, and the name is Fax Directs Advertising, and they're in Anchorage. That people in Alaska haven't really haven't had this happen to them a lot, but apparently down below in the lower 48, they have computers that can send out mass mailings of these messages to your phone number. So we're not trying to preclude anybody from doing business. It's just that we don't want, we would like to see it where there is some, it's a kind of a right to privacy issue versus a freedom of speech issue. So we want to go into this slowly, hear all sides of the issue, and just try to not hurt the industry, but to get some ground rules in place that both the industry, the Fax Direct advertising people, can work within the framework of any pending legislation.
Are there any questions? If not, we have
another question.
Rick, why don't you come forward, because you're one of the customers out there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rick Lauber. I represent Pacific Seafood Processors Association. And I think I approach this with mixed emotions because I find that we receive unsolicited fax advertising, and it infuriates me because I don't mind getting things in the mail because that's their postage and their paper, but the unsolicited facsimiles are at the very best. They're using my paper, and they're also tying up my facsimile machine while they're sending them. But on the other side of the coin, I represent seafood processors, and seafood processors use the facsimile machine for everything from signing orders to communicating with their far-flung operations throughout Alaska. And they also offer product through facsimile machines to their customers. I would assume it might be, they might communicate with them before and make sure that they were willing to do this, but we don't want a situation to arise where, in the legitimate course of business, where a fish processor selling to brokers, someone would harass them with minimal fine, but $200 is not significant, but that's something that is bothersome, and I don't know that it would be a problem, but I raised the issue, and if there's some way that it could be treated, fine. If not, I think we would, quite frankly, rather have the legislation pass in its current form and run the risk of someone complaining than receive the unsolicited junk mail type things from cleaning supplies and typewriter ribbons and so forth. That's all, Mr. Boucher. If you have any questions or any member of the committee, I'd be happy to try to.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was thinking about what you were saying, that you use it for orders, or you use it maybe to for your products or something, and you would hope that...
Actually, to solicit. In other words, you have someone that you think might be interested in buying fish, and you... they're in the business of buying fish, and you so you send them an order telling them that you have a certain amount of, let's say, for instance, pink salmon weighing so much and so many tons of it and so forth in this form, head off, gutted, so forth, and maybe an offering price of X cents per pound. And you mail that to a number of people or facsimile it to a number of people, and if somebody's interested and wants to buy that fish, then they open a line of communication, usually then by telephone. And then, interesting enough, oftentimes now in the trade, the actual contract also goes by fax. We don't wait for the original contract. We just send the fax, you sign it, and fax it back, and everything is done by facsimile. And later, through the mails, you send the original so that there is, in fact, an original someplace. But
As you were testifying, I was thinking, you know, the fact that commercial solicitation means unsolicited electronic or telephonic transmission, but you're saying this is basically unsolicited. I was wondering, that seems, you know, legitimate, it seems appropriate what you're suggesting, and I'm wondering how you know, that kind of activity could be covered, or is it covered in prohibited in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanley, it's almost as though by the mere fact that you're in the business of brokering fish that you're, it seems there's an implication that you're consenting to be solicited. But I guess one could also say that if they were in the some office business, or they had an office, yeah, that they would be consenting to be solicited for typewriter ribbons.
Yeah.
So I don't know how one draws the definition. I think I'd almost rather take the legislation and take our chances, because I really can't see someone suing us for $200. But by the same token, I raise this as an issue, and if there is a way it could be taken care of, then I would like that. If not, well, let's go with the bill the way it is.
May I make a comment?
Yes.
Ann Darr, who apparently is... a representative from the National Marketing Organization in Virginia, I believe, is grappling with this issue and would probably respond to how they are or would like to approach this. However, I think that Julie Barney is on now, so.
Thank you very much. Ann and Julie, thank you very much for tying in with the 49th state today. I thought that we might start with Julie Barney in New York, since the state of New York has, as I understand it, in the Senate, I don't know whether it's become law or not, legislation introduced on March the 2nd concerning this very subject, an act to amend the general business law in relation to unsolicited facsimile transmission. And since New York is one of those bellwether states that other states look to, when formulating regulations. Julie, we would like to hear from you on this. If you would come in, give your name, address, so forth for the record, it would be very much appreciated. This is Representative Red Boucher, the chairman of House State Affairs in Juneau. Julie, you're coming in 5 by 5. Go ahead. Did you hear my earlier comments?
Okay. I'd like to thank the committee for inviting me to testify at this hearing of HB 232, regulating the transmission of junk fax messages. The New York State Assembly and Senate, as you've said, have both introduced legislation designed to prohibit the unsolicited transmission of junk fax messages promoting the purchase of goods or services, which I am confident will be enacted into law this year. Although we have no documentation of widespread abuses of the telefax signaling technology in New York State at this time, this legislation was prompted by specific instances of unsolicited messages tying up state fax machines. Furthermore, we feel that it is clear that in the absence of legislative action now, the potential for widespread abuse becomes more likely as more and more offices and consumers adopt the technology. We have some examples of unsolicited advertisements that were received on state fax machines, which include a 3-page copy of the menu of a Manhattan deli and a promotion for vertical blinds and window shades. We feel that the sending of these and similar advertisements results in certain losses to the recipient, including a loss of time, a loss of use of the machine, as well as a financial loss, since recipients incur expenses for the paper used to print the incoming message and, in some instances, the delivery of the fax messages to the office. Another potential problem that we are hoping to prevent is the creation of companies who gather and sell lists of telephone numbers of telefax signaling machines. We've seen an example of this with a California company, which reportedly gives prizes to individuals who provide them with telephone numbers or fax machines. The company then compiles lists of these numbers and sells them to persons wishing to advertise by a fax machine. The potential for fax owners whose telephone numbers appear on such lists to be inundated with unsolicited advertisements is enormous and troublesome. So, in closing, by prohibiting the unsolicited transmission of advertisements through telefax signaling machines, we here in New York hope to protect the owners of these machines from the cost and inconvenience of receiving unwanted advertisements. And at this point, I will be more than happy to answer any questions that committee members might have.
Do you have a question? You feel free to ask.
Thank you, Julie. This is Bob Herron working for Representative Hoffman. I would concur in your remarks that we realize that there, especially in the state of Alaska, that this has really not hit us yet, but we're just looking to the future and hoping to work with the industry to try and minimize the possible abuse. I appreciate your comments, and thank you very much.
Julie, this is Representative Boucher, the chair of the committee. In my service in both the private and the public sector, I was one of the people back in the early days of computercating, as I call it, where through Source, through other public networks, we were transmitting at that particular time computer messages. And of course, I guess we all recognize that what we're doing is either getting an analog or a digital signal over the telephone transmitted to another electronic device. And in some areas, this has expanded in. In fact, I had an amendment that I was going to propose to the committee to the use of automatic dialing and announcing devices. And, of course, as you are probably well aware, we now that we have electronic systems, be they computers, facsimile machines, or other electronic devices that are in a receive mode, that there is an opportunity for both positive and negative input. For example, as you're well aware, and only in probably the past year, computer viruses or or disruptive programs have been transmitted across telephone lines that have, in some instances, this mischief has cost considerable dollars. But one of the things that I concern myself about is that we're probably dealing with two things here, exclusion and intrusion. So we very much want to strike a common sense, happy balance. As Mr. Laubert said earlier, left with nothing else to do, let's close the door. But by the same token, he recognizes that the electronic media is an opportunity to maybe talk about on a worldwide basis the fish products from Alaska. I kind of liken it to my home that somebody would come into the door unannounced through my door and pick up a magazine and borrow it or use it without telling me. Now, granted, that is rather simple. Truly, they may not be intending any harm, but I look upon that jack on the wall as every bit that is my electronic door, and granted, I could set my fax up so that it required a password. Well, I don't think that I should, let's say, have to do that. But with the growth of electronic transmission of information, and I think that we're only on the cutting edge, I would like to see if it is possible, and I'm sure that back in the state of New York you've got minds that can address this, if we might not look to just, let's say, beyond the facts, but other forms of electronic intrusion without denying or being exclusive the opportunity for fair and reasonable trade. As my thoughts on this end of the line are to probably put this legislation in a subcommittee with the permission of the sponsor and really come up with something that is meaningful, because I recognized that other states are exploring this avenue, and telecommunication here in Alaska with a minimum of roads and people scattered over an area a fifth the size of the United States is indeed a vital part of our future. beginning working together, and hopefully that we might bring other people to the table on this.
Yes, Representative Boucher, I would like to comment briefly on your statement. I think that we're heading in the right direction with this bill because it specifically prohibits the unsolicited transmission. And I feel that companies who have a business relationship with a customer could very easily receive that customer's permission to, in future, have come in on the customer's machine an unsolicited advertisement for goods or services which that company, with which they have a business relationship, chooses to offer them. So I think that we're getting at the real problem, which is unsolicited merchandise or goods and services. And I think a contract or an agreement struck between the customer and the business could very easily solve the problem of precluding potential advertisements which a customer may wish to receive. And at the same time, we don't need to legislate that particular way of doing it. And on your comments on the automatic dialing announcing devices, last year we did enact into law a bill to regulate the use of these machines. And we did so in such a way that did not prohibit their use, but rather requires whoever uses these machines to identify themselves and the company that they're calling for and to provide for an automatic hang-up whenever a customer hangs up. Because we documented problems where an individual would receive a call and then their phone line would be tied up for the length of the message, which could be up to 10 minutes. So, you know, that might be something that you in Alaska would like to think about, and I'd be more than willing to send copies of our legislation to you.
That would be fine, Julie. As I said, sometimes you can incorporate legislation in to another body. Maybe that might not be appropriate, but we would certainly be interested in the approach that New York has taken on this.
Thank you very much.
Julie, we want to thank you for testifying. We have Ann Darr from Virginia online. Quite possibly you might want to stay online. Is this Alaska's Nickel that you're calling on?
Yes.
Good. Well, you can stay online.
Okay, thanks.
Ann, would you like to come in, please?
Okay. You can hear me?
You're coming through to Juneau, Alaska, 5x5.
Okay. My name is Ann Darr, and I'm joining you this morning on behalf of the Direct Marketing Association. We want to thank you, first off, the House State Affairs Committee, for the opportunity to join you today and to comment on the legislation you have before you. The direct marketing industry brings you goods and services manufactured and offered by others through direct mail advertising and telecommunications. We have 3,000 companies nationwide. We employ millions of Americans, and we make it possible for all kinds of people to live alone in metropolitan areas and other places and have access to goods and services by phone and by mail. As an industry, we have made many efforts, we believe successful, to be responsible, ethical, and helpful business people. One example I might mention is our mail preference service, which is known as MPS. DMA instituted MPS in 1971 to allow any American who wanted to send their name and address to MPS to be deleted from our national mailing list. In 1978, we instituted the telephone preference service so that people could send their name and telephone number to us to be deleted from our national telephone marketing list. We have not yet taken any steps regarding facsimile transmission. That's because it is so new and such an exploding and innovative communication channel. Frankly, we have few examples at this time to work with to try to determine, to have developed a position by this time. We have established a special task force which is reviewing facts during 1989. And we hope that we can report to you, our lawmakers, what we have learned and what we recommend by the end of 1989. In the meantime, we are urging restraint to Alaska and to other states because we believe that facts could turn out to be the best and most efficient way to do business, or the worst. Until we can get a handle on who is using it and who might be using it, we have a proposed regulatory approach to share with you this morning. That proposal proposal would prohibit unsolicited facts unless the facsimile occurs between persons who have a previous relationship or the fax occurs during non-traditional business hours, say 6 p.m. and 9 a.m. local time, and it would require that any faxor would delete the name of a faxee upon request. We believe this solves your problem to curb runaway abuses at the onset and will give you a vehicle to amend when more facts about facts are available in the future. Finally, the exploding technological aspects of facsimile should not be ignored. We understand that, for instance, regular paper is available now. A gizmo came on the market this month, which allows any person with a facsimile machine to attach the gizmo, and then anyone who calls them must have an access code. Sometimes 50% of a problem solves itself as the invention is perfected. I think that's about all I have to offer this morning. If anybody has any questions, I'd certainly be happy to discuss them with you.
One of my staff handed me, Ann, I can tell you, you've got a sense of humor there. No wonder you're able, a part of a national marketing organization. One of my staff handed me a message that says, ask Ann about Mr. Fax from California.
Okay, well, Mr. Fax from California is a member of our association, and we have been talking to him. We are aware of what he does, and here's what it is. He faxes during nighttime hours. He faxes a one-page solicitation about a special purchase of facsimile paper. At this time, that's all I know.
All right. Well, Ann, let me just, in a moment of trust to both you and Ann, let me give you my fax number. In fact, I've been a computer nick for years and have used bulletin boards and the other stuff, and so far I've managed to avoid computer AIDS, that is computer virus, simply by placing a safety net over my computer, if you will. I'm part of those groups that, although at 68 I tend to participate with young programmers from 8 to 80, that keep trying to improve electronic communications. So this to me is just another outgrowth of the information age, and the thought came that rather than voicing it, or I don't have a bulletin board that I can work, but we do keep our fax online. I recently purchased one for myself, and the number here is 907-465-2186, and it's online. I haven't passed it out to everybody. Please don't pass it out to everybody. But if you could use just what you just got through saying, we will fax you our legislation if you will give us your number, and you might take a look at it and fax any recommendations back that you have. And that might well apply to you in New York, because what I intend to do is so that this thing is thoughtful and constructive, and Mr. Herron, who is representing the sponsor, indicates that it would be acceptable to put it into a subcommittee and give lots of thought to it. It's my belief that we just don't push legislation out here. And I know a number of our members of our committee are interested in this technology. So why don't we start off by exchanging fax numbers, and maybe you can follow this up by sending us some information. And there might even be some examples, Anne, that you figured. In other words, we're going to open up our system at this end, and if we could exchange information with you, especially realizing that there's a four-hour time difference, it might just be helpful to the process that we're undertaking.
Okay. Our fax number here is 303-790-3460. And I noted your fax number, and I'll be happy to send you information. I'll also send you some thoughts we have about automated dialing announcing devices. And we supported the legislation in New York last year.
Excellent. And you might send us some examples of what your company does. In fact, it would be good if my staff had the mailing address and your regular phone number as well. And when we send this fax, should it be to your attention?
Yes, it can be to my attention, and that would be fine. A-N-A-N-N-E, Dar, D like David, A-R-R. Okay. And I'll send you plenty of information for the staff.
Great. Could we have your mailing address too, Anne, and your regular telephone number?
Certainly. It would be 1360 Everly, E-E-V-E-R-L-Y, Road, number 201, McLean, that's M-C, capital L-E-A-N, Virginia, 22101. And the telephone number is 703-448-1000.
And thank you, Anne. Do you have a copy of the legislation that we proposed?
Yes, I do. I have a copy of House Bill 232.
Also, there were some amendments that I'm going to wait till I get some feedback before we introduce that regard the automatic dialing and announcing devices. And I'm going to send a copy of that to both yourself and Julie for any comments before I bring it before the committee.
Okay. We appreciate that.
Julie, is it acceptable to set up a facsimile exchange with your office? Would that be helpful?
Yes, it would. That would be perfectly acceptable. I did note your number, so I'll give you our fax number here in New York, which is 518-455-4380.
Could we get an address to Julie and a regular telephone number, please?
Absolutely. Anything can be brought to my attention. Again, it's Julie Barney, room 513, the Capitol, Albany, New York, 12248. And my phone number in my office is 518-455-4881.
Thank you very much. Julie and Anne, we're going to sign off from Juno unless there's any questions from the committee. I'm sorry that I've monopolized the conversation. Anne, do you have any questions?
No.
Or Eileen? Bob?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much to the both of you, and I feel enthusiastic about putting some legislation together that's action-oriented, not reaction-oriented. Thank you very much to both of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All righty. What I, with the blessing of the committee, and we don't have everybody here, what I'm going to do is, Anne, I'm sorry that you're going to be leaving us. My goodness, I would have you write on a subcommittee on this. In fact, would you like to... We can always tie you in. Would you like to be the civilian member?
I think that would be difficult.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, what I am going to do is Representative McLean is here. She has indicated that as time is available, she would like to serve on the subcommittee, but she has a tremendous workload herself. So what I'm going to do is try and get several others, because telecommunications is very much a part of what we do in state affairs, and probably with you and Dennis on it, we can set up lines of communication and maybe come out of this with something that is constructive. And I thank you very much for your time and bringing it forward. So with that, I'm going to, as I said, appoint a subcommittee. I'll talk to several of the other members, and we'd like to get moving on coming up with some meaningful legislation.
Thank you, sir.
We have one more item to come before the committee, Can we grab Representative Copeland? All right.
All
right, that's just fine. That's probably, knowing how my staff carries the workload for me in here, that's probably the source of the information anyhow. We have a substitute for House Bill number 45, an act relating to eligibility for retirement benefits.
I have a brief sponsor statement here, and I have copies for the committee, which I'd just like to read into the record. Representative Copeland had a doctor's appointment this morning, so he couldn't be here. Sponsor statement first.
Your just name and
my name is Lisa McLaren. I'm staff to Representative Milo Copeland. This is the sponsor statement from Representative Copeland for sponsor substitute for House Bill 45, an act relating to eligibility for retirement benefits under the public employees retirement system for delegates to the Alaska Constitutional Convention and providing for an effective date. I have become aware that the small number of dedicated Alaskans who took part in the framing of our state constitution were not considered employees of the territory of Alaska for the purposes of the public employees retirement system. Many delegates worked for the state in the years since the convention. Others did not or did not work or serve long enough to vest. I believe it is only proper that we recognize their contribution in more than a symbolic manner. To accomplish this, I have submitted sponsor substitute for House Bill 45, which vests in the public employees retirement system those who participated in our constitutional convention as elected delegates. The Division of Retirement and Benefits has found only two serving members of the constitutional convention who will be affected by this bill. The cost to the PERS will be minimal. This recognition is long overdue.
Thank you very much. Sally, would you like to come forward? I know you're busy. My apologies for keeping you waiting.
It was a nice day, Mr. Chair. We got to leave the other building. Mr. Chairman, I really have no statement. The bill is certainly your call. It does not have much of a fiscal impact on the funds because there are only two people, and there's no operating impact on the agency. So, the only thing that's kind of out of sync is we would have two people in the system that invested with only 3 years. Mm-hmm. If you have any questions.
And any questions from the committee?
Yes, thank you.
Representative Spanos.
All other people is 5 years, is that right?
That's correct.
And if this said 5 years, I'm going to assume that these two people would not have been.
That's correct, because they did serve 3 years.
Right.
Their total aggregate is 3 years. The convention, of course, didn't last that long, but their other service added on.
Mr. Chairman, I forgot one thing.
Sally, why don't you stay there?
I was asked by staff yesterday how we would feel if this legislation would have some sort of provision so that it would not remain on the books past a particular date, and Representative Copeland has absolutely no problem with that whatsoever. I should have mentioned that earlier.
Thank you. That was the thought that I was going to express. Is there anything, any other comments, Eileen?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I think staff Dennis brought that up this morning, and if there was, if you have a thought to a quick amendment that could be brought forth to accomplish that, because as you said, there's no sense of leaving it on the books. This is one of those areas that you have mixed feelings, but in this particular instance, and because Representative Copeland, I would like to see it passed on out of this committee, but by the same token, I want to see it self-destruct, if you will, after it served its purpose. Do you have any thoughts on the media?
I don't have any specific recommendations. Maybe Sally could speak to that possibility.
Maybe Bob could speak.
Or suppose we action in haste usually sometimes results in problems that open up other doors that we're not aware of. Representative Spanholz.
It occurs to me that that may not be necessary, and someone may have thought this through further than I have, but can we identify how many former delegates to the Constitution are still living?
Two.
that there are only two members who are still living, and so it would, in fact...
Others are still living. These are the only two.
Who are not in the system.
Who are not in the system.
Then it doesn't seem like it's really a problem to have it self-destruct to me. If there are only two people in this category,
that would be my initial impression, is that once these two people process through the system, they or their survivors, depending on what they choose, it would automatically take care of itself. But you're right, the language would still be on the books.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Stolnaker, Deputy Director for the Division of Retirement Benefits. Yeah, I would see, you know, if this were made temporary legislation, for, as an example, to go off the books after 4 years, the only advantage, as Sally pointed out, would be this: after we were to appoint these people to retirement, then the provision could go off the books and you don't have it hanging around. But as Representative Sponholz pointed out, there is only two people. The effect is going to be, once they get on retirement, we're not going to take them off retirement, so nobody else would ever be eligible under that provision. So I guess it's just kind of a housekeeping kind of an idea of however you want to handle it.
I might suggest, sir, that if you did a provision like that, you'd end up with an editor's note on the statute book saying you did it. You know, one just switches to the other.
In other words, I guess...
It wouldn't be in big print, it'd be in little print.
This, in other words, this legislation as it exists would be all right to pass out of committee then?
We see no problem.
All right, okay. That's, I want to make sure in the name of doing something good we didn't create more problems for you, which you certainly don't need.
No, it's pretty specific and there should be no other problems with that.
Right. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I'd like to move HB 45 out of committee with individual recommendations.
So moved. Any objection? We are adjourned at 10:01, and thank you very much. Is this your last...